Good evening, good morning, wherever you may be. Thank you for tuning in. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm your host this evening, Dave Schrader. Tonight, we're going to take a look at reincarnation and the afterlife. Many of us are driven by the idea of what comes next. What can we expect? Are we truly just snuffed out like a candle in the wind? Or does our energy, does our soul, does our consciousness continue on in another form? Personally, I was a big skeptic of the idea of reincarnation myself. And then we spoke with James Leiniger a number of years ago. He has a fascinating book his parents wrote called Soul Survivor. Soul Survivor, about a little boy who started having visions and memories of being a pilot, a World War II pilot. And he had information and knowledge he should have not even been in his concept or reality. His father put him to the test, and together they walked through this strange looking glass and found corroborative evidence to prove that James Leiniger was in fact a World War II pilot that was shot down near Japan. It is one of the more fascinating stories, and that one started to turn the corner for me as I read about the case and the family, and I saw the interviews and had a chance to interview them for myself. It certainly opened me up to the idea of reincarnation. Our guest for the first 2 hours this evening is a veteran police detective. Robert Snow is devoted to evidence and hard facts, and he had never ever given any thought to the idea of reincarnation. But during a hypnotic regression, he had an experience that was life-altering, maybe even afterlife-altering. We're going to talk with him about that case, what he found in those regression states, and what it meant for his life. We'll also take your calls a little later on in the show if you have questions for our guest or your own thoughts on reincarnation. Then in the last 2 hours of the evening show, Tricia Robertson joins me. She wrote the wildly successful book, Things You Can Do When You're Dead, True Accounts of After-Death Communication. Her new book is an eagerly awaited sequel to that successful book called Things, More Things You Can Do When You're Dead. So we'll talk with Tricia. We'll hear about some of the more fascinating cases. And she has a couple of really amazing stories to share with us. We've got that going on tonight. Stay tuned, relax, turn down the lights, turn up the radio, and stay with me, your host, Dave Schrader, here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host this evening, Dave Schrader. Tonight, Portrait of a Past Life Skeptic, the true story of a police detective's reincarnation. Robert Snow, our guest on Coast to Coast. Robert, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
What a fascinating awakening to have. I mean, to be somebody who is clearly drawn to evidence and clear-cut logic, to suddenly have your life kind of upended with this, you know, that's got to be quite a paradigm shifter.
Well, it was. And truly, getting the information was not as hard as accepting what it meant. Accepting what it meant to your worldview. You realize you have to completely change your worldview if you start believing in this compared to what you believed in your whole life. So you're right. It's quite a shift.
Well, talk to me a little bit about your life before this. You're a police officer, veteran police officer, a detective. Had you had experiences in your life, ghosts, UFOs, monster sightings, anything strange that had ever led you down this kind of supernatural realm?
Absolutely nothing. You know, I was a police officer for 38 years at the Indianapolis Police Department. No, I didn't have anything, zero. And you know, when you're a police officer, you look for evidence. You look for physical evidence, things you can touch, things you can pick up, things you can show people. I had never, ever been, even considered any other worldly explanations for anything. Everything had to be solid evidence.
So what sends you down the path of even going in for a hypnotic regression? What was the genesis of that?
It was kind of a dare. I've been a police officer like over 38 years, and I was did a lot of things there. I was captain of detectives. I was the commander of the homicide branch for a lot of years. I was commander of the organized crime branch, a lot of things. But I never wanted to be a police officer. When I was growing up, that thought never entered my mind. The only thing I ever wanted to be, and this from the early stage, from 4 or 5 years old, was a writer. I always tell people that. Of course, you know, when you're a little boy, I pat you on the head, say, that's nice, you know. That's the only thing I ever wanted to be was a writer. But being a writer, and especially when you first start out, is really, you really can't live being a writer. So you had to have other jobs. And so when I was in the military during the Vietnam War, and when I did my 4 years and got out, I was looking for a job to, and my brother happened to be a police officer in Indianapolis. And this, of course, the Vietnam War was still going on, so they were really hurting for manpower. And he told me, well, why don't you come down and apply, and you'll try it for a little bit, see if you like it. And so I did, and, you know, I was there for 38 years. But it was really a good idea. It was really a good decision, because being a police officer also gave me tons of things to write about. And I've written, you know, by now I have 17 books in print, and I've been in a number of national magazines. But the thing about being a writer is not only can you be a writer, you have to be a reader. You can't just write all the time. You have to read all the time, too. And you have to read in fields other than your own. You just can't read just what you write, you know, the things you write about and things. Because
right.
You want to see how writers handle things. But if this is, you know, really handled poorly, why was it handled poorly? Well, you won't do that. This is handled well. So anyway, because of this, I belong to a number of book clubs. Well, there was one of the book clubs one time had a little blurb on it about a book they had called Coming Back by Raymond Moody, Dr. Raymond Moody. And it looked kind of interesting. You talk about this doc. Said Dr. Moody had been involved investigating near-death experiences and apparently had a friend who was a hypnotic regressionist, a therapist, and she talked him into doing a past life regression. So he wrote a book about it. So I ordered the book. Not that I had to give it any credence at all, but again, I like to read different fields and different writers and see. So I got the book, and I read it, and it's a well-written, very well-written book. And he goes to his friend, lets his friend hypnotize him. Dr. Moody, he goes back to like 8 or 9 past lives, and he describes them all and tells what he saw. But interesting enough, at the end of the book, he kind of hedges and says, yeah, I don't know what this is. I mean, it might, I don't know. He wasn't sure what it was. He kind of hedged and said, he's not really sure. And that's kind of the way I felt after I read the book. I thought, this is probably just your subconscious mind. You're bringing up old, forgotten memories and, just reorienting them to the stories to make it sound plausible. And I didn't think too much about it. I let it go. I thought, well, it's just interesting, but there's no proof, nothing for it. I mean, how do you prove this sort of thing? So I let it go. Well, a couple months later, I was at a party, and there was a woman there. She's was also a psychologist, worked at the police department. We were just making chit-chat, a little chit-chat like you talk about movies you've seen. We started talking about books you read, and I have to remember Dr. Moody's book. And I mentioned to her that I'd read it. And I didn't know at the time that the psychologist, she used past life regression in her practice. I didn't know that. So she asked me what I thought about the book, and I kind of belittled it. I thought, yeah, it was a well-written book, but it's, you know, hokey. I said, this stuff, you know, this is just people who are wishful thinking things. These are people who want to blame the bad problems in this life on things they can't be able to account for. And there was like, right. Gee, my life sucks because of bad karma from previous lives. It was getting toward the end of the party, and I'd had some drink, and I think I got kind of obnoxious and just putting it down really bad. And she was very gracious. I'll say she was very gracious about it, especially considering the fact she used it in her practice. And so what happened, she ended up basically daring me to try it myself. I thought it was a phony, try it myself. And at first I said, no, I'm not doing that. Then it got down to, you're scared? Now, you don't want to ask a man if he's scared. Of course you're not, you know. So anyway, I ended up saying, yeah, I'd do it. So she gave me the name of a friend of hers who did it. But then the next morning you wake up and you're more clear-headed and you think, I ain't doing that. And
right.
I wasn't going to do it. I thought, I'm not doing it. This is stupid. I thought it was foolishness anyway. I didn't believe it. So I wasn't going to do it. But it seemed like from then on I would run into this woman every day. And you'd see her coming. She'd always ask me, well, have you made the appointment yet? I'd always have some kind of excuse. Like, oh, I've had 6 meetings a day and I couldn't do it. You know, some kind. And every time you did it, your excuses sound more and more feeble. It's kind of funny because it seemed like before this, I didn't see this woman very often. It seemed like after this party, I must run to her every single day. It just drove me crazy. There she said, oh, God, there she is. You know, you've got to make some kind of excuse. Finally, I just got tired of it. And I just said, well, what I'm going to do? I went ahead. I made the appointment. I thought, what I'm going to do, I'm going to take a tape recorder along. I'm going to record the whole session. I'm going to cooperate 100% with this regressionist therapist. Then I'm going to show them how foolish this is. This is not going to work. They're not going to take me back to any past lives because there is no such thing. And I'm going to show it. I'm going to record it all. I bring it back and say, see, I told you it's all foolishness. And that's basically how I got talked into doing it.
Now, knowing that's where you were heading, as you reflect back and look at your life now, do you remember having recurring dreams that seemed out of place in your life, things that you seemed to know that you didn't understand why you knew these things, as you look back at it, kind of the, 2020 hindsight, before you realized that reincarnation was a possibility? Did you ever have those moments?
No, that's interesting. Because people ask me this. I never had anything happen to me that I would consider even close to being paranormal or any unexplained dreams or anything. Everything in my life was very rock solid. And this is why I fought for so long before I'd accept what I had found. Even though I kept finding more and more proof that what I had seen was true, I kept fighting it and trying to prove it wrong. My whole intention when I started doing this was to prove that reincarnation was not true, that it was wrong. And because, again, my life as a police officer built on rock-solid things, things you can see, things you can touch, things you can show to other people. So I was just not willing to accept this. I really wasn't. But, I had absolutely nothing happen to me before this time that I would even consider the slightest bit paranormal.
All right. You go in and you have the regression. How many regressive sessions did you go to?
Well, I went to one, the first one I went to, okay, I met the lady, Dr. Mary Ellen Griffith, very nice, very gracious lady, had kind of a funny musical type voice, very soothing voice, and she was a very nice person. I went in and I introduced myself, and she asked me what kind of problems I thought I had that I needed help with, and I told her none. I just thought that regressive therapy was interesting, I wanted to try it, and she didn't have any problem with that, so, sure, no problem at all. So she told me, and it's funny because her office looked just like I thought a psychologist office looked like. She had an old wooden desk and a chair and a big long couch. I mean, it's like you just the typical office thought. So I sat down on the couch. I wasn't going to lay down. I sat down on the couch, and we talked. We talked for a little bit. Then she said, okay, now close your eyes. So I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know if she was going to swing and watch for my face or an amulet or, you know, what she's going to do. I had no idea because I'd never been to a hypnotist, needless to say. But anyway, we didn't. She said, close your eyes, and we started talking. She said, tell me something. She said, tell me about your college graduation. So I told her about my college graduation. And she said, okay, tell me something that happened to you in high school. And I told her about that. And we went on to grade school. And I could see what she's doing. You know, she kept getting younger and younger memories. But, you know, again, I had told myself I was going to cooperate 100%. I really was. I was going to do whatever she asked me to do, but I wasn't going to make up anything. I wasn't going just to please her. I wasn't going to say right. I saw her or remembered anything. I didn't. So anyway, we're getting down, you know, down and down, down to, you know, earlier memories type thing. So anyway, we find out my earliest memory I had, and I'm still cooperating. I'm telling her nothing's happening. I'm certainly not hypnotized or anything. So finally, she said, "Okay, now see if you can you see a balloon. Imagine a balloon." Well, at the moment I was sitting, there was a window to my right, and I could see what looked like a big purple blob on my eyelids, and I assumed it was just a light coming through the window. I told her, yeah, I can see a purple balloon. She said, okay. She said, now, imagine yourself getting in the balloon, okay, and going up. So I'm trying to imagine this and everything. I'm cooperating 100% because I wanted to show her by how phony
right.
it was.
Sure.
So anyway, so she said, okay, take a balloon up. So we're doing it. She said, okay, now look down. Can you see the light? Any lights down below? Interesting enough, out of the bottom of my eyelids, I could see little points of light. But I thought, you know, this is a reflection off the floor. This is nothing supernatural. It's a reflection off the floor. But and interesting enough, it didn't look like glare as much as little points of light. But the moment, I didn't give it any importance at all. So anyway, she thought we were going along. She said, okay, now I want you to land the balloon somewhere. And we went. My point is, this is her daydream, not mine. I'm not going to imagine anything just to please her. So
right.
We go through this. I've been going to do this a dozen more times, laying the balloon. But I'm telling her, hey, nothing happened. You know, I don't see nothing. She said, when you land a balloon, she'd say, okay, now reach up. There's a control of your head or bring the balloon down. I'm trying to imagine that, being cooperative, and then nothing happened. And I'm thinking myself, this is what it is. People are just saying things to the hypnotist to please them, not anything you really see, because I didn't see anything. I really didn't. So we went through this probably a dozen times. And finally she said, okay. Says, okay, well, obviously these are places you don't want to land. She said, now, see if you can imagine a mountain in your mind. And but this time I'd been sitting on this couch, which, by the way, was an unbelievably hard couch. I was already starting to ache sitting on this couch for 20 minutes. I couldn't believe I don't think she wanted people to stay very long in her office. That couch was really uncomfortable. But anyway, so I'm sitting there she said, imagine a mountain. So I'm to imagine a mountain. So, okay. It's not, you don't see a real mountain. It's just you picture a mountain in your mind. So she said, okay, now take the balloon to the mountain. Try to imagine the balloon going to the mountain. So I'm doing my best to cooperate, and I try to imagine landing on the mountain. And she said, okay, now we're going to this cabin. She said, okay, what do you see in the cabin? Well, I didn't see anything. I told her, I don't see nothing. You know, this, again, this is your daydream, not mine. So anyway, she said, okay, imagine a meal and everything. So I'm trying to go along and imagine. So finally she said, okay, I'll leave the cabin. She said, now there are 12 steps. We're going down to a valley from this cabin. So I want you to walk down the steps, and I'm going to count them as you walk down.
Now, can I ask you real quickly here? As a police officer, and especially a detective, when you're questioning a potential criminal and you're trying to find out what they know, you can lead them and walk them through a scenario. And a lot of times in a court of law, when they review the tape, if you are leading them, they'll dismiss most of what you're saying. So when you are sitting there as a detective and you know she's taking you down a certain path and she's suggesting to you what you're going to see and how you're going to see it, are you fully cognizant of that? Are you trying to fight that while you're doing it?
I remember thinking to myself that she'd be a terrible interrogator because you could always anticipate her next statement or question. And believe me, as an interrogator, you don't want people to do that because then they can prepare for it. You always want to catch them by surprise by your next question. Well, she wouldn't. I knew exactly what was going to happen. So, again, I wasn't impressed by what was going on. I'm going along, trying to be cooperative. I'm just trying to be nice and cooperative because I said I would. And, again, I got this all on tape, so I want to go back later. I can say, see, this is all baloney. Nothing happened. So, anyway, she's counting the steps. She goes 12, and each number is longer, 11, 10. And I know what, how many, everybody's seen this on TV in the movies. You know what hypnotists do, I think how funny this is, She's counting 5, 4. And I'm trying to cooperate. I'm trying to see myself walking down steps and everything. And interesting enough, when she got to 1, something really bizarre happened. All of a sudden, I was in a valley. I don't mean I just imagined I was in a valley or, something you just saw in a picture in your mind. I was standing in a valley. It was really bizarre because at the same time, you knew you were sitting in the office because I could still feel the couch, how hard the couch was. I could hear Dr. Griffiths move, but I was standing in a valley. Now, I wasn't stupid. I realized I had been hypnotized. I mean, because that's the only explanation for this.
So you're thinking that while this is occurring, I'm hypnotized.
Yeah, exactly. Because there's no other. I knew there's no explanation. How could you be? I know I'm sitting on this couch, like I said, but at the same time, you're in a valley. And the interesting part, it was vividly clear. Vivid, as clear as anything I could see normally. I could see a valley with lots of trees and leaves. And funny, I could see the leaves moving. I could feel a breeze in my face. But I told myself, it's just the air conditioning in the office, Bob. I ain't stupid. I didn't figure you'd been hypnotized, Bob. She's a guy, no matter what you thought, you've been hypnotized. But I really thought before I went there that I couldn't be hypnotized. I thought I was much too strong-willed. But I realized it. But then, the funny part was, it wasn't scary or frightening. It was more kind of like the most fascinating ride at an amusement park you've ever been on. I mean, you can go to amusement parks and go on some rides that really look real. They feel real. But they're not real. They're not real.
Right.
You can experience virtual reality. It sure looks real. But it's not. And I thought that's what this is. But I thought it was kind of neat. So anyway, she said, okay, says, look down, describe yourself. So I look down, and I see some bare leg, bare legs, gnarly-looking feet, and I see I'm wearing fur. My left hand, I'm carrying a big piece of a tree limb. Now, everybody knows. I knew what I was. It's Lupita Caveman. Now, I didn't realize until after I got home late that night and listened to my tape that she had told me just before this, I want you to go to your very first life you experienced on Earth, the very first time you were here. I didn't remember that at the moment, but I looked down, and I see what it was. I look like a caveman, but everybody who's seen movies and TV programs knows what cavemen look like. They wear fur and they carry a big stick like this. So I thought, that was kind of funny. It was kind of amusing. This was, it was like the most amazing ride you'd ever been on in your life. And I thought it was fun. I thought, well, geez, this is kind of neat. It was kind of like taking an LSD trip without the danger of the drugs. I mean, you're
right.
What it was like.
Okay.
So anyway, so she said, okay, so what happened? So I'm just walking along this valley. And again, I can still feel I can see the leaves move. Every time the leaves move, I can feel a breeze blow my face. But I'm just assuming it's the air conditioning in the office. So we're walking along, and all of a sudden, it was like a part of my mind that I didn't know about started operating. Well, because all of a sudden, I recognized this, where the place is at. Now, Bob Snow didn't recognize this place, but the body I was in recognized this place. I told Dr. Griffiths, I live here. I live up on the side of a hill. I could see a big rocky outcropping on the side of a hill where I lived at. And I said, and the funny thing, I said that, and I didn't know I was going to say it. It was just all of a sudden just kind of like the words that bubbled up my lips without me knowing what I was going to say. And I thought how really bizarre that it was. The interesting part was this wasn't like a dream, because in dreams, usually your attention is focused on whatever the action of the dream is, whatever the plot of the dream is, that's where your attention is focused. In this case, nothing was happening. I'm just standing in a very beautiful valley. I could hear birds chirping, and I could look around any way I want to, but nothing's happening.
So it's more like you're looking through the eyes of this person. We'll continue with this journey. Our guest this evening, Robert Snow, Portrait of a Past Life Skeptic, returns here on Coast to Coast AM. Thank you for joining me this evening on Coast to Coast AM. If you've missed any part of tonight's show, or you know you're going to be opting out here soon, you have to go to bed or get up early in the morning to get your day started, and you want to know where you can catch up with this episode, well, it's very simple. Join coasttocoastam.com and become a Coast Insider right now. For a one-year subscription, breaks down to 15 cents a day, and it'll give you access to all the shows that you missed and all the shows that you heard that you wish you could revisit. It's just that simple. Become a Coast Insider right now. You'll find all the information on our website at coasttocoastam.com. 15 cents a day. Where else are you going to get that kind of entertainment? 5 years of past episodes, live chats with George Norrie and other hosts and guests from Coast to Coast AM. Spectacular news. Great features. It's all right there on the website. And while you're checking it out, if you're single, we're right coming up on Valentine's Day. That's right, just a couple of weeks away. And if you'd like to find somebody that you can connect with that has similar interests, might like ghosts, UFOs, Bigfoot, psychic phenomena, conspiracy theories, well, George Norrie has the answer for you, ParanormalDate.com. ParanormalDate.com. It's never been easier to find someone just like you. And there's over 28,000 members. There's also an app in the Droid store and an app in the iTunes. So you can get that and access it. You can check out the membership. And if you decide to sign on, you get access to fantastic members around the world just like you. So go check that out at ParanormalDate.com. When we come back, we'll continue our journey into the afterlife, or is it the pre-life? I never really understand with reincarnation. Our guest, Robert Snow, will describe to us more about his experiences with reincarnation next on Coast to Coast AM. We're back with Robert Snow. Robert, you were talking about the first past life you seem to have bumped into, where you found yourself in a location that was familiar to the physical form you were in, but not to you at all. And you were describing it as being very caveman-like. Do you remember any other sensations? Was there a sense of the grass under your feet or smells of anything in the air? Or was it just as though you were kind of looking through the eyes of this person at the vista around you? Robert, are you with us? Well, our guest this evening, Robert Snow, he is a veteran police detective devoted to evidence and hard facts. Never gave any thought to reincarnation, as you mentioned. But on kind of a dare, went through a hypnotic regression, and he experienced a vivid awareness of being alive, not just in one, but three separate historical scenes. He was still skeptical after this, and we'll open up phone lines in the next hour. What do you think about reincarnation? Have you had those moments yourself where you felt as though you knew things you shouldn't know? Perhaps you had these lucid, vivid dreams where you would catch visions of yourself in a reflection, seeing a face that was not yours, looking back at you. Reincarnation is fascinating in so many aspects. And as Robert was just explaining to us, seeing through the eyes of this being, which he felt a connection to. And I don't know, is that even a proper way to mention that? Robert, did you feel a connection to this being that you were seeing through his eyes?
No, I didn't feel any connection to this person. It was just like the most... It was like a bizarre, something really bizarre, but it was enjoyable. I mean, because I knew it wasn't real. I knew I'd been hypnotized, but I didn't really feel a connection to the person. But here's enough. Dr. Griffith, after I, you know, told her what I was wearing or what I looked like and described the valley, she told me, okay, go to where you live. Well, this time, I didn't walk this time. It's like there was a gray fog for a few seconds, and all of a sudden I appeared at the mouth of a cave. But the interesting part was, as I walk into this cave, the person who lived here was really unhygienic, and it was an awful stench when I walked in. And I thought, how is this possible? I mean, where would that come from? And I thought, boy, I didn't know hypnotized, you know, being hypnotized do that much of it, but just like a horrible smell of a person who had lived for years, very unhygienic. So anyway, I described my cave to her. She said, okay, now I want you to go to your death. She said, go to your death and tell me what you see. So again, there's like a few moments of gray fog. And now all of a sudden, I'm not in the body any longer. I'm floating above. I'm about, 10 foot above. And I can see a little scrawny little man laying on the cave floor. He's covered with the fur, and he's shaking and coughing. I could see it was a really painful coughing. He was just—he was dying. And she said, "Okay." So I go out of the cave. She says, "Look up to the top of the valley. You see a light?" And I, you know, I did this. I went out of the cave, and sure enough, there's a big bright light of the valley. And she said, "What does life teach you?" And again, I didn't know what I was going. I didn't know I was going to say this. Before I even knew what I was going to say, I blurted out, "This is a bad life. I had to learn what it was like to be all alone. I didn't have anyone in this life." And again, when I said that, I was kind of surprised because I didn't really know what I was going to say. I hadn't planned to say it. I didn't know I was going to say it. She said, "Okay, now go into the light, and I want you to go to a life where you did have someone." So I said,
"Well, Robert, let me ask you this." She began this regression and hypnotic trance, if you will, walking you through some simple steps, trying to make you regress in your own current lifetime to memories,
yeah,
and then bringing you back. And as you said, you weren't even really aware that she said, "Let's go back to your first lifetime." But she did put you in a valley.
Yes.
And how of all the places in the world would she pick a valley? Why wouldn't she pick the Louvre or someplace totally different?
I would suppose, since she told me to go back to the very first life I'd been here, I assume she thought it'd be a long time ago. That's why.
But doesn't that seem like she's leading you as well? If she's putting you in a situation like that,
and that's basically what I thought at the time. At the time, I thought, I'm imagining this in my. I'm figuring this is my subconscious mind. She said, "Go into the valley." This is my subconscious mind bring up memories of some valley I've seen somewhere. That's all this is. This is nothing supernatural. She told me to go to a valley. My mind bring up memories somewhere from my past that I had forgotten. People don't realize you forget a lot of things constantly. Subconsciously, you don't forget anything. It's all stored there. And I forget all this is. I'm seeing a valley I'd seen time. I'm just reordering everything to make it, to make a story like she wants. That's all there was to it. And that's why I didn't think there was it was fun as unusual, but I didn't think there was anything, special about it or anything.
All right. So she walks you to that point, you see your own death in that life.
See, I want you to go to a life where you did have someone, where you had someone important to you. So again, there's 3 or 4 minutes of fog, and all of a sudden, I see myself walking down a street, but it's in a large city. There's tall buildings all around me, but I can tell.
Now, when you say you're seeing yourself, is it like you're watching a movie, or are you looking through the eyes of this person?
I'm seeing through somebody's eyes again, another person's eyes. Because she asked me to describe myself. I'm a man, and I'm wearing a kind of a fancy suit. And I have a walking stick. I tell her, it's not a cane. I'm not old. It's not a cane. It's a fancy walking. It's a kind of a real thin, fancy walking stick. I'm walking on the sidewalk, but I could tell it wasn't present day because there were horse-drawn carriages going by and gas lights. The interesting part was, it was a sunny day. I could feel the sun beating down on me. Now, I'm sitting inside of a closed, darkened office. I thought that was really kind of, I still thought it was a hypnosis is all, but I could feel the sun beating on me. And she said, "Okay, where are you going?" And I told her, "I'm going to meet a woman." She said, "Okay, who is it?" I said, she's giving me a name. So I can explain anything. I couldn't think of a name at the moment. Nothing came up. And she said, "Okay, where do you go?" I said, "Well, I meet her, and we go to a sidewalk cafe." And I said, we're walking, we walk, we sit down. And he asked, "What's your order?" And I said, "She ordered some kind of special water, and I ordered a glass of wine." At the moment, I thought right then, nothing was real about this, because I was always the impression this looked like the late 1800s, late 1900s, that men who drank in them days didn't drink wine, they drank whiskey. But anyway, I let it go. She said, "Okay," and we talked about this for a little bit. She said, "Now go 5 years forward in your life." So the next scene, I'm in a hallway of this apartment building. I'm having an argument with a woman who I tell Dr. Griffith is my wife. We're having some kind of argument. So I find just walk away, walk down the hallway into another room. And I can see it's an artist studio. There's the whole roof is a skylight, and one wall is all windows. And I see dozens of paintings around. And again, there's like a part of my brain that I didn't know existed. I recognize this place as the place I worked, from the body I was in. I told Dr. Griffith, "I'm an artist." I said, "That's what I do." I told her, "I paint portraits." I said, "I hate painting portraits. I just hate it, but I need the money." I said this maybe 4 or 5 times, how much I hated painting portraits, but I needed money. And she had me describe the studio, and I described the wall windows and the skylight and all the paintings hanging around. And she had me go to, you know, the next senior life. And I found myself at a party where people were congratulating me. I didn't know what for, but I found myself at this thing. And finally, she said, "Okay, now go to your death." Because apparently, according to what I found out later, apparently that's one of the most important parts, times of a person's life, because you do kind of a review of your life, what you thought was important. So I go to my death. I see myself in the bed, laying on his bed, dying. And she said, "What did you regret about this life?" And I said, "I regret we didn't have any children, because my wife couldn't have children." She said, "Okay, now." She said, "I'll pass anybody and go to the light." So I saw myself rise out of the body and go through the roof of this building. But everybody's seen ghost stories on TV and movies. You know what it looks like. I mean, this wasn't anything, you know, supernatural. I know what ghosts look like.
And she said, a tough guy. You're a tough guy to get to, Robert. At this point, you've now lived two different lives, two different deaths. And I'm with you. I mean, I understand the skepticism, but it seems like you might start relenting a little bit at this point. Like, wow, this is a weird experience.
At this moment, again, I just thought it was on my subconscious mind. So again, she said, "Okay, go in the light." But this is the interesting part. People think when you're hypnotized, they watch too many movies and books, that you're totally under control of the hypnotist. And
right.
You're really not. Mm-hmm. But Dr. Griffith told me, "Go in the light." And I didn't. I saw myself flying through some woods. I could tell it looked like a fall night, it was kind of a brisk fall night, because it looked cold, but the trees still had leaves. So when I saw myself flying through the woods, the next moment I'm floating, and I'm on the second, third floor of this mansion. I'm looking in the window, and it's in a room. There's a big fire in the fireplace. Nobody's in the room. There's a big fire. I told Dutch Griffith I wanted to see one of my paintings before I left Earth. I wanted to look at one of my paintings again. And over the fireplace, there's a still life. It's got a bottle and fruit and a big sun in it. And I told her I wanted to look one more time at my paintings before I left, which I thought was kind of interesting. She kept telling me, "Go into the light," and I wouldn't do it. Which is, because again, for people who think you're under control of the hypnotist, you're really not. So anyway, I passed out. I passed out. She said, "Okay." She said, "Now I want you to go to a life when you were a female." Now I almost broke the hypnotist. It is a hypnotic stick. I had to almost chuckle. I thought, yeah, that's going to happen. I thought this would be the deal buster, because that's not going to happen. How can I have any subconscious memory about being a female?
Right.
She said,
"Okay.
She said, go to your life when you're a female."
Well, can I ask one thing though? When you were going to the light in these moments, was there any other awareness? Were you hearing voices? Were you seeing things?
No.
Or was it just like you were traveling through a tunnel of light?
It'd be like a gray fog. It was all of a sudden everything had turned real foggy. You couldn't see anything for three or four or five seconds. You couldn't see anything. So after I did this, I come out and I'm standing in some woods again. And this is not a valley. It's just flat level woods. And I look down, and sure enough, I'm a female. And I thought to myself, how funny. I said, "But this is really bizarre." I thought, boy, you know, this is really bizarre. So anyway, this is a life as a young Greek girl. I went through a life as a young Greek girl. And Dr. Griffith and I went through this life, and I told her I worked at this temple where as a young Greek girl. And we went through the life again and everything. And then we went through my death and everything. Then finally, Dr. Griffith told me, he said, "Okay." He said, "Now I want you to go back to your most recent life. Go back to the life you were before you were Bob Snow." So again, there's a little gray fog in there for 4 or 5 seconds. And all of a sudden, I see I'm back in the painter's body. This is the same guy I was in the life before the female. I'm in the painter's body. But interesting, I'm painting a portrait. I'm standing in front of an easel, and I'm putting the very final touches on a portrait. But the interesting part was the model was a hunchback woman. I thought how really bizarre this was. But the funny thing, I can see every single brushstroke. This is so clear. I can see every single brushstroke of this painting. And I tell Dr. Griffith that what I'm doing, I'm painting the portrait of the woman and all this. And again, I just thought how bizarre it was, a hunchback woman having a portrait made of herself. So anyway, I'm telling about this, and we go to another scene in my life where I'm in a garden and I hear piano music, and I go into the house and I see my wife playing a piano for people. So anyway, Dr. Griffith says, "Okay, go 5 years further in your life, the next 5 years." So anyway, during this gray fog, I'm just nothing's happening. I had brought along a recorder that had an hour-long tape in it, hour on each side, so I could have uninterrupted tape of the thing. Well, before I could go in the next life, all of a sudden I blurred out again, "She died of a blood clot." The doctor said she died of a blood clot. Now, I had absolutely no idea who I was talking about. I had no idea I was going to say that. I just kept blurting out, "She died of a blood clot." The only thing I knew was, whoever this person was, was a woman who was just vitally, crucially important to this person whose body I was inhabiting. Because I felt like I wanted to cry. I felt, you felt this tense emotion inside you, this intense sadness, like I wanted to cry. And I thought, how silly this is. I didn't know who I was talking about. All I kept saying, she died of a blood clot. Then suddenly, all of a sudden, my recorder snapped off. The hour's up. All of a sudden, I heard the big click. I opened my eyes, and that was it. That was in the session. The point was now I felt really kind of foolish because I had gone in there so sure of myself that nothing's going to happen. And for at least the last half hour, 40 minutes, I've been babbling like a fool. And I was really flustered when this was over. I was really, really flustered. And Dr. Griffith, asked me, can you see how what you've seen relates to your present life? And I really couldn't at the moment. Again, I was just too flustered by what had happened. I just kind of mumbled something, I need to think about it a bit and everything. So I wrote her a check and got out of there. And then I went out and sat in my car for a while. And the problem was not that what happened, because again, I was just convinced that it was hypnosis, of subconscious memories brought up. The problem was the vividness of it. It had been so clear and so vivid. And not only could I see and hear things, I could feel things. I could feel the sun. I could smell. And it was so clear. It really bugged me. And I sat there probably all half hour or so thinking about it. What just happened? What was this? But finally, I convinced myself that's all it was. It was just subconscious memories. You brought them up. You reordered them to make a story. And that's all it is. Just forget about it, Bob. Just go home and forget about it. But, it's easy to say that, but it wasn't that easy to do.
Subconscious memories of being a woman, where would that have come from?
Yeah, well, I thought? I thought, Bob, this is something you've seen. Something like I'm hot. The movies you've seen where men dress up like women. That's all this is. Something like you've seen this in movies where men dress up like women, like Milton Berle used to do all the time, things like that. That's all this is. This is some memory. You've seen a movie where a man dressed up like a woman, and that's what this is. You just brought up from your subconscious mind, reordered to make a story, but it's not true. And again,
it was hitting an emotional level with you, though, Bob. I mean, this wasn't just something that you were just watching.
Very much so, very much so. Because again, when I kept saying she died of a blood clot, I really wanted to cry. I was so sad, and I thought at the time how foolish this is. I don't know who this person is. I don't know who I'm talking about, but I wanted to cry. So anyway, I kept trying to convince myself it's just, Bob, it's all this. Forget it. It was nothing. It was just you were hypnotized. You saw some subconscious memories that were reordered. That's all it is. But I really couldn't get over. I just couldn't, because it just kept bugging me because how vivid it had been. And I found actually for the first couple of years after I regression, if I closed my eyes, I could still see like the painting. I could see every single brushstroke in that painting if I closed my eyes. It was that vivid. And obviously, if it had been in my subconscious mind, it was now in my conscious mind. And I kept thinking about it constantly. Every day I'd think about it just all day. That's all I could think about. I would think about it. I kept telling myself, Bob, forget about it. It's nothing. It's just subconscious memory. Forget about it.
Did it open up a desire in you to want to paint?
No, not at all.
Okay.
No. What I wanted to do is get rid of this. Because believe me, as a police officer, I've dealt with people who have obsessions. And believe me, this very seldom ever turns out good for you. A person with a real deep obsession, like I was having with this regression, because I just kept thinking about it and thinking about it. Just every day, I'd think about it. Hell, 50 times or 100 times a day, I'd think about it. And I'd close my eyes, and I could still see the scenes real clear. And it bugged me. It really did. Because again, like I said, I've dealt people with obsessions, and it very seldom turns out well. So what I decided I need to do, I said, Bob, what you need to do, you need to find either the still life painting you saw in the mansion or the picture of the hunchback woman. Because if you find them, you'll all of a sudden you'll say, oh, that's where I saw this. And you'll remember I saw it, 6 years ago in an exhibition somewhere, and that would explain everything. I thought, I got to find one of these two paintings. It will explain, I'll remember, and I didn't see it. It's not a past life. I saw it in this life somewhere. But, it's one of the things you saw. You probably saw a little bit about the artist, and you forgot about it because it wasn't that important to you. You simply forgot about it. But your subconscious mind doesn't. So I thought, that's what I'll do. I'll find one of these paintings. How many paintings of hunchback women could there be? I thought, how easy would it be to find this?
Well, we'll find out when we return. Robert, we have to take our top of the hour break. Portrait of a Past Life Skeptic, the true story of a police detective's reincarnation, his new burgeoning obsession in finding the answers to, is this real Or was this simply a new memory that he was remembering in a different way? We'll continue with that, and we'll open up phone calls a little bit later on in the hour. Stay tuned. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM.